Hi, welcome to another Applied Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Reeve. This time, I sit down with Steve Walker Duncan of the Culinary Arts Department, and we talk about how applied learning is so integral to everything that culinary arts does. It's a great discussion. I hope you listen. Enjoy.
I've been working with BOSA for 15 years now. I am currently the program chair for the Culinary Arts Department. I have been teaching culinary arts since 2003 formally. However, before that, when I was in industry, I tended to be that go-to person that, you know, the newbies were sent to me to run through all the things in the kitchen and get them up to speed and do orientations and all that sort of thing. So I gather, you know, at some point I developed some kind of affinity to conveying information.
And what classes do you currently teach?
Right now, I don't do a lot of direct teaching. I say, my role is predominantly administrative.
Right.
However, I'm working with my instructional team to develop new programming outside of the department, such as the project we've got funded for the Songhees Wellness Center and the First Nations community. We're also working with community groups to help them develop work skills and overcome barriers to learning and those kinds of things.
Awesome. What are your values around teaching and learning that kind of inspired you to start on the track towards applied learning? Like, what was it about applied learning that kind of fit with the kind of teacher and the kind of institution you want to build here?
Well, I guess I'm it's kind of a case of preaching to the choir in my case, in as much as everything within the culinary realm is pretty applied. It is very much a hands-on industry and a sector. So it's something we've bought into a long time ago. The traditional apprenticeship model has been our training method of choice for centuries, really. But what I would like to see is a much more in-depth opportunity for students to learn not just about the technical skills revolving around cooking, but the what impact food has on them, on their community, on their families, on their profession, and on their career.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Let's move on a little bit to the first of the many principles we're going to be talking about today. When you're picking, like, they're obviously in your field, it's fairly technical and fairly hands-on, as you've said, but is there a way that when you want to teach an idea or a concept that, is there a best way that there's a particular method for teaching, like you said about the depth of food? Like, to understand that more than just they're there to cook food that's good and tasty and it costs this much, but there's a depth there. Is there a way to bring that to, this idea of what food is to a practice? How do you bring those two together?
I'm a big believer in experiential learning, based on what I just sort of said. So the idea of having students have an experience, and that experience may be something as simple as role play within a classroom. It may be something we use debate quite a lot for different, particularly social and ethical questions. We are using far more of our industry partners to expose our students to, you know, seeing very much, you know, what a chicken production facility looks like, what farmers have to go through in order to put food on the table, what processors have to do in order to be economically viable and competitive in a very competitive marketplace. So it's really a case of, it's a multifaceted approach, and I don't believe there's a single right or a single, you know, perfect answer or a single perfect solution. It's a combination of many different things.
Oh, excellent. When you're planning a program, like, and this gets to the intentional part, what do you hope your students will get out of that, like, series of activities? Like when they leave, what is it you hope that the students have truly learned from the way you've built this program, this class, this course?
I'll be talking very specifically. I want our students to understand and recognize and respect the value of food in all its senses. In as much as, more so than just the economic cost, but the environmental cost, the political and the social cost of food. Because it is the one thing that, you know, every human on the planet does, and everybody is participating in daily, multiple times a day, it is more than just a need to sell a product. It's more than just a commodity. It's essential for life.
Excellent. Thank you. That's a great answer. We're going to talk a little bit about preparing the curriculum. Now, this, how, when you're beginning to plan a course or a program or a class, and remember, you know, we're talking to people who may be newer, like, how do you start the process of planning, like, applied learning anything? Like, what kind of goes through your mind? How do you plan it out?
As I say, from our, it's almost done subconsciously, given that it is what we do. We are, you know, we are very much day one. Here's a knife, hold it from the blunt end, and, you know, put the sharp end away from you, kind of thing.
Good advice.
So it's about getting, as I say, getting a hands on and getting that taste and flavor and texture and color and all these types of things. Start very early on. As I say, we don't really have to plan it. Subconsciously, we come into it with that already in place.
Right.
But obviously, we have our curriculum. We work on a curriculum established by the Industry Training Authority. So it's very structured. It's laid out very well, mm-hmm. starting from the beginning and working your way. And it's a step, a laddering process into subsequent levels. And each level or each concept or learning outcome is built on previous ones.
Great. So it sounds like, so the next question is really, it's kind of about the logistics, like what was the thought process to consider the equipment, logistics, learning materials. So it sounds like some of that is provided you by industry standards, but in your own, you know, within your own confines of Camosun, obviously there's a role there of like the sort of logistics of it all.
Right. And it's like so many other things, I guess. It's about resources. You know, it's what do we have to currently work with? What is on our wish list? What would we like to have to be able to deliver a more applied learning type of program? I think we're very well equipped when it comes to physical equipment and tools and equipment. And our space was designed about 40 years ago. I'm sure we would like to see an updated and a more modern space. But again, fundamentally, as we have a little saying in the department, cooking beans is cooking beans. Whether you're doing it, you know, over an open fire or whether you're doing it with the latest technology, you're still looking to create a tender bean.
Right.
You know, which is a very, very simplistic analogy, but it really does suit the purpose really well.
So when you're setting out, you know, in a program that's really from the beginnings built around applied learning, the I'm just so from my comprehension here, the planning part is right akin sort of step by step with the idea that this is how we should do it. Is that
absolutely? I mean, we try to create an industry realistic environment for the students. So that applied learning really is learning that they are going to be familiar with when they leave and enter industry. Consequently, the program is built around we have practical and we have theoretical learning identified clearly in our program profile. So, you know, the theory learning is the stuff that we're doing in the classroom, and even that has an applied component, but that practical stuff is right out of the gate from pretty much day one.
Okay. So let's move on, and we're going to talk a little bit about authentic learning. And I guess, what is your student experience, or what is about your program that ties, you know, current... what is it about your program that makes it look and feel like a real kitchen? Like, where they would go to work afterwards. Like, like obviously you've built that in. So what is it that you've tried to do?
Quite honestly, the piece that makes it the most authentic is the fact that they're dealing with the end user. So when the students have been preparing their food all morning and at 11:30 those shutters go up in the cafeteria and there's a lineup of faculty and students and staff waiting for lunch, that's the realistic, the genuinely realistic, because you're now having to stand in front of your customer, right, your client, and stand by your product and feel good about the fact that you've prepared a healthy, quality, you know, economical meal for those people.
Awesome. And do you think, like, the idea of meeting your end user as the sort of one of the capstones of that authentic experience, it looks like a real kitchen, it operates like a real kitchen, and then you get to serve it to people who are really hungry, and who have all of the safety concerns that you've been talking about in your theory of how you cook food, how you keep it safe, how you keep it the right temperature, and so on.
Exactly.
And then they serve it.
That's right.
So that's kind of that full cycle.
That's right. That's right. They see the whole process just as they would in industry.
Right.
And then we do the reflection. You know, then we have an opportunity to say, well, what worked, what didn't work. You know,
right.
What part of your, you know, your recipe or your dish for that day was successful? If it was not successful, do you know why? Can you recognize why there was, you know, it was either wasn't ready on time or it wasn't cooked properly or seasoned properly or what have you?
Right.
And that's where that applied part really becomes relevant, because the customers will come back and say, this is not appropriate.
And that's exactly where we're heading to next. We're talking now about reflection, and you've kind of pieced into it a little bit, and we'll spend a little more time here. What reflective questions or practices do you have students consider once they've completed part or any part or a full cycle of any learning, applied learning activity?
One of the big questions or the big statements we make to students regularly is our role here at the college is to help them be successful. We want to see them move out into whatever industry sector they choose to follow their path and be better trained, better prepared, and more capable than those people that have not been through a program such as ours. So when it comes to, you know, reflection, we want them to recognize the complexities and the dynamic of food in general, as I mentioned earlier, whereby it's part of our culture, it's part of our society, it's part of our global economics. You know, in North America, the reason we're here is because of a search for a faster route to get spices to Europe. You know, so utilizing that as a platform to say, why am I doing, you know, why am I in this business? Is it just for a paycheck? I believe it's more than that. I think we have a greater value to our communities because of the work that we do. And what I want to see, or what we are constantly striving to do, is give our students the ammunition, for want of a better word, to be able to move out into the workforce.
Right.
And you know, demand higher wages, to, you know, command respect, to be able to do the work that, you know, they are trained to do in a manner that, as I say, makes their career sustainable and lucrative.
Right. How do you pinpoint times or breaks when student reflection is critical? Like, how do you know when, like, okay, I think we need to look back on what happened?
I mean, certainly, I use the term crisis points, you know, or critical control points, which is an industry term, which is used for the health and safety of food, but it's also relevant here. So, you know, any point where there is a potential for a negative outcome is certainly, particularly when you're talking about safety,
yeah,
is certainly a good chance to look at that process or that system or that activity and reflect upon it. You know, did we meet critical control points for temperature? Did we, you know, deal with the food safely? Did we receive it? Did we store it properly? All these kinds of things. And then, again, the interaction, the interface with the paying customer is also a good one. You know, in the short term after that, we like to say that cooks spend hours and hours and hours making something that's generally gone in 15 or 20 minutes. So you can get almost instant feedback. Right. You know, when you're dealing and you have an opportunity to communicate with your end user, you can find out very quickly and hopefully very honestly whether they liked it or not. And in some cases, it might be a technical criticism, or it might just be a personal opinion on whether or not they enjoyed it or not. And now you're talking about things that are quite ethereal? Mm-hmm. Ethereal, where it's personal taste, it's personal preference, and you know, that's one of the challenges that the industry has, is that of the 7.5 billion people, all of us have a different makeup or a different wiring of our taste buds and our brain synapses, so that you're unlikely to ever get two people have exactly the same experience.
So it sounds like you coach up a certain kind of resilience. You know, where on the one hand you want to be open to reflective criticism. Absolutely. You know, if the steak was tough, that probably is more objective than it was subjective. Although there's a certain blend of the two.
And if I could just add to that, you know, using that as an example, so now we have to say, well, why was the steak tough? Was it a poor choice of purchase? Was it poor cooking method? Was it an event throughout the processing of that piece of meat that made it tough? Was it from an unreliable source? There's all sorts of criteria that could result in a guest having a tough steak.
Yeah. And I think so that there's a sort of a critical discourse as well. So on the one hand, it's like, look, you know, we need thick skins, but we need open skins. Yep. But on the other hand, let's look at the chain of events.
Correct.
You may have cooked it perfectly, but these factors beforehand were never going to make a tough steak tender.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So when and how do you reflect, as you as an instructor or you as a program leader, when and how do you reflect on a whole unit or a cycle of activity, an applied learning cycle of activity? Is there a time at the end of the semester? Is there a time at the various points? I mean, beyond the sort of critical short-term ones, are there points where you sort of built in reflection, or is there a process there that you follow?
There's the way our classes work is that the students rotate through a number of different stations during the course of the program, and they actually, so there's five stations that they rotate through twice, so 2 weeks on each station. So at the end of each 2 weeks, that's a good opportunity to reflect. That's when the instructors are doing their grading on that particular station. There's an ongoing series of assessment tools, both quizzes and block tests for those stations as well. That's another area we can, and even on a day-to-day basis, there's that, you know, there's a daily assessment at the end of the day as an overall sort of reflection to see what the outcomes were, and a briefing, a preamble for the following day's assignments. So it really is an ongoing process. Then, of course, we do have our final technical exams. We have a final practical assessment. And then the final piece of the whole puzzle is an ITA certificate of qualification exam.
Okay. Putting this on the students, it sounds like there is a lot of conversation and reflection throughout, sort of in cycles, but daily. How does student reflection impact the applied learning cycle?
We're trying to be as responsive as we realistically can be, and it is certainly a conversation that is ongoing, because we provide, as well as providing a learning landscape or a learning environment for our students, we're also part of the service provider within the institution. So we're I don't know if constrained is the right word, but we certainly have to take into consideration that we are delivering a service to the institution and all the population that exists here. So that's certainly a part of that discussion. But what we want to see is that our students, and we know the industry is evolving, and things, you know, beyond the restaurant and hotel type environments are providing some great opportunities for our students. So how are we able to, you know, shift and change in motion the things that we're delivering so that students do have an understanding? Our food truck is a great example of that. You know, it's a relatively new, in this part of the world anyways, a relatively new sector, and we are now hoping to be able to create that learning activity for those students, which means they can then, you know, have that one more skill in their tool belt, as we refer to it, moving out into industry, which makes them that much more appealing to employers.
And then that kind of brings us into orientation and training, excuse me. Now, you've been part of this for a long time, but how do you prepare yourself to guide an experiential learning activity or guide even the instructors? How do you make your own preparations?
I think when it comes to applied learning, I'm a big believer in the, you know, using your own personal experiences, having a, you know, and it, being reflective of those, because, you know, our own personal, we're human, just like anybody else. We've made mistakes in our own, you know, our own professional lives. Utilize those as learning tools, being able to, you know, explain on one of the, again, a statement I like to make to students is, I'm here to help you not make the mistakes I've made. Through my own experiences, and you know, you'll have plenty of your own to make, but you know, hopefully I can point you, guide you away from some of the ones that I've experienced, and I think that's where the applied learning has its most value, is the personal experience of the people delivering the training, as well as, you know, teasing out of the cohort what their experiences are. And this is where we try and get the students as over and above the technical training they're getting, is softer skills, or the soft skills, the communication skills, the leadership qualities. You know, we've had some really interesting situations where students and students from an area or a source, you wouldn't expect them to have strong leadership skills, but that particular person has risen up and for whatever reasons has commanded a position of leadership amongst their peers. And those are the kinds of things. And then we've been much more cognizant of exploring those and having a conversation with both that student, but also the rest of the cohort. Like, what is it that makes this person, what is it gives you the respect, or makes you respect this person more than, you know, others?
Right.
And we found that to be very, very valuable.
Right. And so this is, just to sort of, you know, bring us up to speed here, you know, while it is important to learn the chain and then think about it, but there's also these soft skills of looking at yourself, reflecting on your own behavior, you know, being able to laugh at your past mistakes and learn from them.
That's right.
And then learn from others.
That's right.
With successes and failures. So I think most disciplines would say that's... like, those soft skills are vital to resilience.
Absolutely.
You know, you will screw up. You'll screw up a plate. You'll drop a, you know, whatever. And it's the resilience to move on from that and to see that other people have demonstrated that resilience.
Yep. And be able to recognize it and be able to reflect on it. It's, okay, well, why, you know, what was I moving too fast? Did I take on too much? Was I not prepared? All sorts of these questions have to be. And honesty is a big part of that. You know, yeah. There are times when, and you know, we're renowned in the industry as having, you know, inflated egos. And that's some of that self-induced, but it's certainly... it's not helpful in many cases when you know, when it comes to reflection and when it comes to being able to take that step back and say, okay, well, did I perform to the best that I could possibly have done?
Okay, awesome. This is going to be a little bit weird because your discipline is really built around this, so the students may not come with these questions, but for some questions, the question was initially, how do you explain an applied learning process to students? And then more, how do you explain why are we doing this, and how do you connect that to how we are doing this? So the why and the how are two separate ideas when you're teaching something.
Mm-hmm. I think it's as relevant, if not more so, with our discipline than others, because we have a lot of students come to us and say, okay, just teach me it. Just give it to me, and then I'm going away. And we have to really experience, particularly younger students, you know, particularly those coming out of the K-12 system. It's a very conscious effort to be able to sit them down and say, we are going to teach you more than just how to cook a steak, how to prepare a dessert, how to do all these dishes. We want you to understand. We want you to conceptualize what is happening or what's happened to that particular piece of food, how it impacts you and your community. So it really is a case of we do, even though we are, you know, very much entrenched in applied learning, we do have to lay it out for the students from day one. As they come through in subsequent levels, then it's you know, we reinforce it, but it's already there. And when it comes to the how, it's really about constant reaffirmation of what, you know, what it is that they're here to learn. That it is more than just technical skills for putting food on a plate. One other, you know, saying that we use quite regularly is that, you know, people, there's lots of great chefs who have gone broke because they don't know money and they don't know people. And if those skills are not there, it doesn't matter how good you are as a technician. If you don't understand how to work with people, motivate people, inspire people, see the skills that people can bring to your operation, or you don't know how to work within a budget or, you know, be profitable, then your skills are kind of wasted. You don't, you know, and vice versa. There's people that I know personally that are, they're mediocre cooks. They're competent, but they're mediocre cooks. But they know money and they know people, and they're very successful. So it really is about, you know, broadening their understanding of the role that they play. Both, and this goes beyond, you know, we have a number of students that have, we have our sort of alumni that we follow, and considerable numbers of them have left the actual physical or the primary act of cooking to go into other fields. But the skills they've learned are incredibly transferable because of both the part food plays in people's lives, as I've said, but also those soft skills, those abilities to work with people and learn. The idea of learning about food is endless. You know, there's so much to take on board, and when you talk to the best chefs in the world, they'll tell you they're still learning day in and day out. So that's where I think the idea of really reinforcing with them and then actually telling them and getting them to recognize the fact that, you know, this is applied learning and it will benefit you in so many other ways, right, than just that ability to cook.
Right, right. Beyond the technical stuff. Yes. Now, this question does apply to you, I think, quite directly. Does your preparation differ when you work with a community partner?
Generally speaking, it becomes less about the financial implications when we're dealing with, I mean, our program is called Professional Cook. Therefore, you know, by its very nature, professional is about earning a living from it and, generally speaking, making a profit.
Right.
So there's a lot of emphasis on the financial side of that, and, you know, how to make the most, get the most bang for your buck, so to speak. With community partners, that's not necessarily less so. It's just less obvious. You know, they'll still be working to a budget. They'll still be trying to get the best bang for their buck, and they'll still be trying to maximize their resources, whatever they may be. But when we're working with community partners, we are obviously a little bit softer about how we deliver. The emphasis, while it's still on creating, you know, maximum outcomes for whatever resources are available, it's more about the community building exercise. It's more about creating connections, about having them be open and accessible to whoever their market is, whether it be helping people with barriers or social barriers or any of these kinds of things. And that's, I find that to be much more, and it's like a softer soft skill.
Right. Okay, let's move on now. We're going to move on and talk about a little bit about continuous improvement, which, again, this may be a little bit of themes we've touched on a bit. So this is a simple one. So sometimes when your activities don't go as planned, for better or for worse, how do you assess your students' experience? Like, when things go sideways? And then I'm going to follow up immediately and say, when things don't go as planned, what tools do you have in place to reset and get things back on track?
I guess when things... errors, I'm a big believer in, and you learn more from your mistakes than you do from your successes. So the idea of things not going to plan, we are always advocating for the fact that this is a safe environment for our students. Because we're creating a quasi-realistic cooking environment for them from an industry standard, we want them to know that here is it's a good place to make mistakes, because this is where we are here as the instructional staff to analyze them, reflect upon them, and look at ways in which they can be nullified in the future. So I think safety is probably the single biggest factor there, is that, you know, and that's not as easy as it sounds, you know, like, and again, that's part of our culture. It's people are brought up being made to feel bad about making mistakes, and, you know, being reprimanded or chastised or any of these things. And what we are, you know, very, very conscious of and very, very supportive of is that mistakes are okay. Mistakes, and again, this is a safe place to make mistakes, because this is where we can look at them. You know, in the industry, when there's, that's not to say we don't have real money on the table, but when there's real money on the table and you're getting a paycheck to perform those duties, when you do make a mistake, it's costing somebody something. We've built that in. That's part of what we do. It's less safe. You know, it could be a situation where, you know, particularly if it's somebody who has perpetual, you know, mistakes, or somebody that's taking a longer time to develop and learn the skills, that could mean their job, ultimately. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So kind of a building up,
yeah,
of
yeah.
that, you know, make the mistakes now, learn from them now, reflect on them now,
yeah,
so that in the future you'll have not only tools to deal with when you screw up, how to think about it and how to walk through it, but also tend to make less of them.
That's right.
Okay. What role do students play in the feedback loop for the way you build your applying? And we kind of touched on this a little bit, like, not so much from the service end, but like, you go through an applied learning activity and you're like, you have thoughts on how it went. How do students get a role there? What's that?
Peer review is something that we do. Probably more so in the lab environment rather than the production kitchen. Just because of the logistics of, you know, generally speaking, in the lab scenarios, the students will all have the same assignments. And at the end of a class, then they can lay them all out and everybody can try each other's dishes and comment on them. Or we do, in our second level, there is the idea of the plating, the conceptualization of the plates and what they're going to look like. And we tend to let the second year students have much more input into, you know, what a plate that's going into the restaurant looks like. So in the initial stages, when they're in the lab and they effectively cook the entire 3-week rotating menu in 3 weeks, they then create a standard collectively for a number of the plates. Not all of them. The instructors will do some, but then the students will do, you know, and it's always interesting to see what the students come up with and how they break them down. So you'll have a dozen students with a dozen different plates of the same dish. And collectively, they'll look at components of it. And, you know, that piece, that's a good garnish, and that's a nice way to serve the sauce, and that's a nice way to present the meat. And together, they'll create one plate, which then becomes the norm for the rest of the program in the restaurant.
That's a very interesting methodology.
And that also gives them that creative input. You know, they're able to bring some of their own applied experience from industry back into the learning environment.
Very interesting. We're going to talk a little bit about assessment evaluation. So first, how do you structure your formative and summative assessments for students?
Formative is done on an ongoing basis. So, you know, on a daily basis, they'll be given assignments where they have to take those assignments home, prepare for the following day, convert recipes, prepare a work plan, so prioritize which order the different components need to be done in. and then that will be, as I said, built upon. So they do the two rotations through the kitchen. So in the first rotation, it'll be the in the first year anyways, it'll be a very basic list of dishes or assignments that they have to complete. And as they come back in the second half, then the standard of those is lifted, yeah. And they'll be coming right up to the PC1 level. And then from a summative, it's very much, again, on the day-to-day basis, they're graded or they're given an assessment by the instructor on how were those assignments prepared and delivered. Then there's the theoretical, we're currently on an online, they were using D2L for online quizzes and block tests. The quizzes we're very conscious with the quizzes to explain to the students the quizzes are not an assessment tool. Quizzes are a learning tool. Quizzes are there to help you, you know, if you that is sort of old school. It's very repetitious. They can do it innumerable times. And then the block test will be where there's more of an assessment component to that. And then at the end of the program, there is a practical assessment and a technical exam as part of that sort of summative. And then we have it's informal, but the instructor will take the results of the grade book, and they have a transcript, and we'll sit down and have a short interview or a short conversation with the student, basically highlighting the good points and the bad points and anything in the middle.
Sure. I'm going to flip this question a little bit around. So one of the, I think, more surprising ideas that I think people who probably are outside your program, like myself, might be surprised to learn is just the emphasis you have on the deeper connection that food has to society. And so the question was originally, what evidence do you have that applied learning activities deepen students' understanding of a concept, idea, or theory? I'm going to flip that question because you've answered that question, I think, fully. When you're teaching ideas and making connections to the food, to the environment, the social economic roots of food, how food is delivered, what I would call the politics of food, mm-hmm. how does that deepen their understanding?
And this is my personal view on this, but I think it has enormous capacity to enlighten them, you know, about not just food, you know, food. And I just did my master's degree last year, and my final paper was, you know, creating a culture of curriculum that uses food as a vehicle of learning. I think getting people to use food as a means to think about themselves and think about their environments, think about their communities, simply opens up their minds to ask other questions. You know, so if we're talking about the politics of food and we're trying to get them to, you know, understand why the grain, the words just escaped me, but the grain trade organization is in place. So there's a government body that controls how much grain is grown and where it goes and who gets what and all these things. How does that give them an opportunity to look at other government function, other ways in which the government is working to aid or deter, you know, different parts of our society and our community and our nation, for, you know, and globally for that matter. So I think it's really just it's a stepping stone into far more, far deeper mm-hmm. conversations. But ultimately, it's about the fuel that keeps us going. As far as I'm concerned, and I'm obviously biased based on the sector I work in. But you know, we all need it. We all have to do it. We all love it at some level, and it's something we should be paying more attention to, and we should be focusing more of our energies on.
Right. Okay. So the end, you've talked a little bit about at the end of the summative evaluations. I want to talk a little bit about like process or informal processes or formal processes to celebrate the transformation. You have a student comes in at the beginning and they're just like, just teach me how to cut. Let's just teach me the things and I'll do the rest. And then by the end of the second year, how do you celebrate that transformation?
We don't have a formal mechanism in place for that, but we certainly, as I mentioned, we do follow our alumni, and it's, you know, the nice thing about technology now is that it's relatively easy to, you know, keep an eye on people and sort of, you know, see where they're going, especially if it's been a good, you know, good relationship. And we have a lot of industry connection. We you know, in Victoria is a pretty small community, so we are regularly hearing about former students, and we have a lot of them out there. You know, we've been around for 40 plus years, so there's a lot of our students out in industry, not just here, but, you know, across the country and beyond, for that matter. So we do enjoy having that connection post-educative process. And having those, do you remember when conversations, do you remember that discussion, do you remember that? You know, I had somebody walk up to me just a little while ago and quoted me, you know, work smarter, not harder, and explaining how much that resonates now with the work that she's doing, and how it's become one of her mantras to, you know, consider what you're doing, how you're doing it. Can you make your life less stressful by, you know, processing these activities ahead of time, and as I say, using your experiences, using your mistakes, you know, being, you know, mistakes are normal. If you keep making them again and again, well, that's not so normal. Right. You know, the idea is to learn from them and move on from them.
Excellent. Any final thoughts that have percolated throughout our conversation? Anything you want to talk about just to finish off?
I think we've covered everything pretty comprehensively. I'm you know, obviously I'm passionate about this. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy what we do as a department and as an industry. And I genuinely believe that, you know, we have so much more to offer. And we're working on a few initiatives to try and do that, to try and get a, you know, create one of the things I'm working on with Carl Everett over at the Hospitality Management Program is ultimately we'd like to see a culinary undergraduate degree, okay, which would bring a lot of this stuff together at a higher level at a deeper level. Than what is currently on offer, focused again predominantly on food being the, and again it's almost hard to put all that into one program because it's such a broad, subject. We've been working with Nicole Kilburn over at Anthropology, again because of the nature of food and the nature of society and human history, it's a fascinating subject to, you know, help people understand why we're doing what we're doing now, because of what we've done in the past. So it's an ongoing exercise, and I certainly would anticipate pursuing that much further as we move on.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time. Very informative and very thoughtful. Thanks, I appreciate it.
Provide some sort of